Welcome back to Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, hosted by Cliff Beach and sponsored by California Soul Music Record Label. Today we're going across the pond all the way to the UK to speak with Nick Etwell to talk about his group The Filthy Six and his work with Mumford & Sons. Please help me welcome the dynamic trumpeter himself, Mr. Nick Etwell.
So glad you were able to make it. Very excited to be able to talk to you. It's great to be able to listen to your music and kind of get to know about you. Obviously, John Hines, who we spoke with earlier on the podcast, kind of connected me with you. And he's always really great at connecting me with people because his band, The Big Old Nasty Get Down, has just worked with so many people. And I'm assuming he's worked with you as well.
Yeah, it's funny. I actually listened to the interview with John. It was interesting to hear the kind of the starting point for that project, because I think I got involved through Derek Johnson from the he won his Big Fat Booty band out of Asheville.
Yeah.
And he put me in touch, or he got in touch with me because we'd worked together. We'd jammed together in Asheville a few years ago, and we got on very well and enjoyed playing with each other, hanging out. And then he just hit me up and said, I might have something of interest, you know, would you be up for doing it? So yeah, it was interesting to hear that, you know, just that jam session in LA, that it all started from the idea or something.
I think it was in New Orleans, but yeah, similar idea. He just organically started picking up different musicians from here and there, creating what people would think would be a super group. But what it's become, and being able to work with George Clinton and just record with him and things like that at his studio in Florida, it's really interesting.
It is interesting. No, it's great. It's a great idea. It's a great, I like his thought of, you know, you get people together, especially musicians, when it's kind of a jam session kind of vibe. It's you know, anything goes, kind of free for all. Everyone's creativity is up front and on it, you know. So it's an exciting place to make music. So.
Oh yeah, and funk music lends itself to be able to be a jam situation.
Yeah, exactly. It all stems from that kind of world. So yeah, that's. I was chuffed to be, put forward by Derek, and it was great fun. The little couple of gigs that I did with them, which is probably almost getting over 2 years ago now. It's crazy.
Oh yeah, time flies. I feel in this post-COVID world, we don't even know what time it is anymore.
Well, it's not post-COVID yet. We're still in it.
Yes, I guess. We're in the thick of it.
It's yeah, exactly. It's kind of it's certainly changed the landscape for a while. You know, hopefully we'll see some kind of light at the end of the tunnel soon. But it's it's certainly thrown a few spanners in everyone's works.
For sure. And so let's get into it. I wanted to chat with you about your latest album. The last album I listened to was More Filth, which came out a couple of years ago. Yes. I just wanted to kind of understand about how you pick the personnel, who you work with, your recording and writing process. Like, how do you make these albums?
Well, it was funny. I'm going through some photographs from my sister, who's collating a kind of picture album for our parents' 50th wedding anniversary coming up. And this afternoon, I was going through some pictures, and I found some photos from this monthly session I used to organize about 17, 18 years ago, which was kind of the inception of the Filthy Six as a band. I think we were called the Blackjacks back then. And it was, we just got together, I put the band together to play, you know, late 60s soul jazz tunes, you know, Lou Donaldson, Grant Green, Donald Byrd kind of stuff. And I fell in love with the Hammond organ one night doing my homework, listening to the radio, and I think Jimmy Smith, The Cat, came on. And I kind of put my pen down and was like, you know, what the fuck is this? This is amazing. And waited, you know, with bated breath for the tune to finish so I could write down who it was, you know. And it was The Cat. And I went, you know, with my paper around money, went to the record store on the Saturday, which I used to do, and I went searching for Jimmy Smith records or Hammond Organ records. And I think I came across, I don't know if you remember, in the kind of, I guess it was, it must have been around the late 80s, early 90s, the kind of Blue Note compilation albums they used to have, like So Blue, So Groovy, and Heroes of the Hammond, that kind of thing. And I just kind of spent my paper round money on a few of those records and got into sort of Jack McDuff and Jimmy McGriff and found all these amazing tunes. I was like, right, this is, you know, this is me, this is my kind of music. And then I went off to classical music school and just sort of listened to it on the side as my kind of my chill out music, you know, my stuff I used to put my head into when I'd had a long day rehearsing Wagner or something. Never thinking that I would actually ever get a band together to play that kind of music. It was my kind of guilty pleasure kind of thing. But, you know, left college and started playing in bands and, you know, realized that actually I do want to play this kind of music. It's not just to listen to. I have to actually be involved in this kind of thing. So I did joined Trinity Big Band. They've got a big band scholarship for a postgraduate at Trinity College of Music in London, and met some guys there. Met a great guitarist, Swedish guitarist called Jerry Haglund. He became a good friend, and I think the first incarnation of the band was probably the summer of 2001 or something, the summer 2000 maybe. It's probably 20 years ago, which is a scary thought in itself. but yeah, put a band together, started playing just all those old tunes, you know. Grant Green's version of Let the Music Take Your Mind, or, you know, Hot Dog by Reuben Wilson, Turtle Walk, Lou Donaldson, you know, that kind of breakbeat groove stuff. And we just used to play those kind of tunes. And I ended up putting this monthly night on with a friend of mine who DJed that kind of music, or, you know, groove-based music. And we ended up doing it, I think, the last Thursday of the month. And we ended up doing it every last Thursday of the month for 2 years in a little basement place in Soho in London called Tatty Global Club. And yeah, I found some photos from those nights this afternoon. So yeah, that's how it all started, you know.
That's nice. Well, that's nice that your sister is putting together a compilation of all those photos. I think it's always good to kind of have a vision board and see where you've come and see what you've done, and it keeps you inspired and keeps you doing it.
Yeah, it's funny. It's amazing. It feels like yesterday, but, you know, 20 years goes like that.
Yeah, literally with a snap of a finger, a blink of an eye. It's like, yeah. Where did the time go? But then at least you have the music to go back to, and you have the album to be timestamps onto what you were doing at that time.
Yeah. It's funny because I don't think I thought about writing original music for it initially. As I say, I was happy just to play all those old great old tunes, you know, and I'd listen to stuff, you know, coming out of the States, like Sugarman 3, and I've kind of got to know Adam Scone, the organ player, quite well. And, you know, I listen to those guys going, that's amazing. It's just like the, you know, the kind of late 60s stuff, all the kind of prestige and Blue Note records. But I never thought about doing it myself until, you know, until we've been doing it sort of 3 or 4 years or longer. And then just sort of started playing around with ideas, and then sort of thought, oh, actually, you know, that kind of music is, you know, it's a vehicle for soloing and, you know, grooving over. So the kind of heads and stuff are, you know, simple blues-based stuff. So I kind of, once I got my head around it, I was like, yeah, actually, yeah, we can do original stuff like this. And that was the idea. And then I think, it took us a while. I think we did, you know, a few demos and that kind of thing, and played around with a few lineups until things started to actually click and work properly. And then, yeah, the first record was, in fact, we celebrated the 10th anniversary of the first album release proper with Acid Jazz early June this year, you know, while we were still in lockdown.
Wow. Yeah, and you have such a great relationship with Acid Jazz, and there's so many great people on there. They're working with Jamiroquai and Matt Berry, who I didn't even know did music, and then Brandon Heavy. Matt Berry, I guess, has a new album.
Yeah, maybe.
And so how do you like being on their roster and putting out albums with them?
Well, I mean,
they've been around since the 80s.
Those kind of Blue Note compilations that I talked about, I think Dean Rudland, who's the A&R man for Acid Jazz, you know, back in those times and still is, he wrote liner notes for those Blue Note comps back in the day. So I remember reading his liner notes and, you know, just kind of like in awe of all this kind of stuff. Those Blue Note compilations led, you know, I think the Acid Jazz scene was sort of kicking off in about sort of 89, 90, when I was just getting into that music. So they were kind of like, you know, the beacon of British, you know, funk music at that time, with, you know, James Taylor Quartet, who were fantastic, Mother Earth, who I was a big fan of, and then, you know, Jamiroquai, obviously, and Brand New Heavies. Yes, I mean, that was a label, key label to my, you know, learning of the music when growing up. So it was, I think we played a gig in North London, a big old pub called the Salisbury in North London, I don't know, early 2009 maybe, and Eddie Piller, the label boss for Acid Jazz, was DJing, and he kind of dug what we were doing, and we got chatting, and then it led to that. And, you know, if he'd said to me as a, you know, 18-year-old kid, you're going to release your first record on Acid Jazz, I would have been, you know, I would have bitten your arm off. You know, it was very exciting. We did that first record 10 years ago, and did The Fox soon after in 2012. And then, you know, we're all kind of freelance musicians, so everyone's busy doing different things, doing touring with different bands, that kind of thing. So it took a few years then to release the third record, and now, you know, 4 years has passed since the last one. So it's, yeah, like we said earlier, time flies. I think it's about time we do a new one.
Yes, I was just going to ask you, do you feel that something new will be on the horizon for you? I'm not sure if during this time it's a good time to record or not, but definitely a good time probably to work on arrangements and writing and things like that.
Yeah, definitely. It's been very good. It's fun. I kind of taught myself blues piano as a kid. You know, I always did classical music on the trumpet, and it kind of took a long time for the penny to drop or to transfer what I was kind of learning on piano over to trumpet. You know, I was a much better trumpet player than I was piano player, but I found improvising on the piano much easier than I did on the trumpet for some reason. It was like a weird mental thing. I think in my head, in the trumpet was a, you know, that was my classical instrument, and the piano was my kind of blues instrument. And I used to sit, you know, come home from school and spend like 2 hours, you know, with my headphones on, just playing along to records on the piano and working stuff out and teaching myself, you know, Memphis Slim tunes and playing along with Muddy Waters and B.B. King and stuff. So I still do all my writing at the piano. And of course, kind of doing a lot of traveling and touring that I do. These days, you know, I'm away from the piano, but this sort of last 6 months, I've actually had some time at home, you know, and the previous albums I wrote in breaks off the road. So, you know, I had like a couple of months when I had the piano in front of me. So it's been great in that respect. In fact, I think I've probably done more piano practice than I have trumpet practice during lockdown, but I've been sort of digging out some, weirdly, I've kind of switched over. I've been practicing classical music on the piano these days, which I never used to. But yeah, it's been great. I've written a sort of handful of stuff, and I actually recorded an EP over in Atlanta. That was 2 years ago with the American Filthy Six lineup, which I've had going for a few years. But it's, you know, one of those things. It was kind of put on the back burner whilst I went off on the road again. And I've been working with Nick Hard, who produced the Snarky Records, Snarky Puppy Records.
Oh, wow.
He's busy, I'm busy, and, you know, it was, you know, he'd send a mix, it would take me a while to listen to it, then I'd sort of take a while to send him the stuff. So here we are 2 years later, and there's still a couple of tweaks that I want to do. It's that, you know, when you keep on going back over things and go, maybe just a little bit, of, you know, a little bit less trumpet here, a little bit more organ there, a little bit, you know. I need to draw a line under that pretty soon. In fact, I've been talking to Nick about getting that done in the next week or so. So that, we did four tracks in Atlanta with a great bass player called Kevin Scott. I don't know if you know him. I've done a load of stuff with him since meeting him about 6 years ago, I think, when I first brought the Filthy Six to the States. And we've ended up doing a lot of stuff together, a lot of different stuff in and around Atlanta and the South and stuff. And
what's the difference with playing with the people in the States versus playing with the people in the UK? How's the vibe and the recording process and working with Nick? Especially with Snarky Puppy, I'm sure that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the UK band have been together, or me and Mark, the sax player, have been together for 18 years. And I think the newest member, James, on guitar, has been with us at least 6 years, you know, so we're kind of very familiar with each other's playing and working together. The kind of interesting thing of picking, you know, guys that I met, mostly guys out of Atlanta that I met through Kevin, actually. Great sax player called Taylor Kennedy, drummer called Mark Rodabar, organ player called Chris Spees out of Mobile, Alabama. You know, and it's kind of interesting to play music I've been playing with a bunch of guys over here for years with a bunch of new guys over there. You know, it's kind of felt quite fresh to do that. And we kind of, for that EP recording, we did one brand new track, and I reworked a few arrangements with those guys for some tracks that were off the first Filthy album. And it was kind of nice to go back and revisit some old tunes and, you know, have some brand new material to put in there as well. And I'm actually really pleased with it. I've just been, you know, procrastinating and fiddling and tweaking far too much with it. But I am excited to put it out, hopefully, by the end of the year or at least early next year. But yeah, and hopefully some of the new stuff I've been working on the last few months. I think I definitely want to do some recording with both sets of guys, you know. I want to get the UK guys, the kind of original band together, record the new stuff. And also, when I can get back to the States, get Kevin and the guys together over there. And who knows, I don't know if I'll record the same tunes with the same guys. I might kind of mix it up and see how it works. But yeah, it's exciting to mix it up, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's exciting and it's an experiment. I mean, you're trying different things and seeing what works, and you're not necessarily married to one thing or the other. You're just letting it organically happen.
Yeah, exactly. And then that, you know, leads on to the, you know, John's idea of you know, getting lots of different people together, and, you know, different people play off each other in different ways. So it's yeah, I mean, that's part of music. You know, music is all kind of you know, conversation. So when you've got a bunch of guys making music together, those kind of different ideas and different vibes you get off people can throw up some interesting things.
Oh yeah. So then, aside from the music that you do, I've also seen in your bio that you worked as a trumpet player for Mumford and Sons, and I wanted to know what that experience is like working with such a well-known group. And you taught one of the members in the group, but I wasn't exactly sure what you taught him. And is that correct, Ben Levin?
Yeah. Teacher? So, you know, in between sort of touring and gigging, I had a job teaching jazz piano at a school in Wimbledon, Southwest London, which I had for 13 years, unbelievably. It's scary when I say that as well. But he was one of my first pupils there. And this is going back early 90s, I think, early to mid 90s. He was one of my first pupils, Ben, the piano player from Mumford. And I used to coach him and Marcus, the singer, in a group, and he played drums and Ben played piano. I used to get them to do some old Lou Donaldson tunes and Grant Green tunes. It was quite fun. And so I used to coach them in a jazz group and talk Ben for like 5 or 6 years. And I'd kind of bump into Ben every now and again in and around London, because he was playing in bands from school. And then I think we bumped into each other at Glastonbury Festival with the Filthy Six. We were playing when they used to have a jazz lounge back at Glastonbury, like a bona fide sort of jazz stage. And we were doing the headline slot, I don't know, about 2 a.m. or something. And I looked out in the crowd and saw Ben's face, or Ben and Marcus sort of peering back. And that was just when the Mumford, I think that was their first Glastonbury. It must have been like 2008 or something. And we hung out, as you know, first time we'd hung out properly, the three of us since school for them, and met the other guys. And then about 6 months later, Ben called me up and said, would you like to, you know, play trumpet on a little record we're doing? And I think that was an EP before their first record. And so I ended up doing a bit of recording with them, and that was, you know, when they were still, hadn't broken yet at that point. And then they kind of blew up in a crazy way, and they asked me to go on the road with them. And yeah, it was, and here we are 10 years later, you know, and I've had 10 years of touring the world with them and having a great time, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's exciting. I mean, just to be able to see the evolution of a band in their early days and then their origins, and then leading to, you know, explosive success, and then having a launching pad to then continue back and, you know, revitalize into your own music as well. So I think that's really exciting to kind of have that balance between working for yourself, working for other people.
Absolutely. And I think it was, they had a crazy kind of meteoric rise from, you know, I think the first gig I did with them was to 150 people or something, if that, maybe 100 people at the ICA in London in, I don't know, spring 2009. And then a year later, the first sort of proper tour I did with them, there was, you know, it's 1500, 2000 capacity. And then later that, you know, that was in the, I don't know, March or something. Then at Glastonbury that summer, I played the John Peel stage to kind of, I don't know, 15,000 people or something. And it just, the kind of explosion was crazy, you know, to 1 minute playing to those kind of smallish rooms to playing, you know, big festival slots, which led to kind of, you know, bigger venues. And then, you know, within a very short space of time, arenas. It was kind of crazy to watch that happen and be a part of that. But it was very inspiring, you know, in the breaks then to come back. And, you know, I think that's what spurred me on to make it a quick turnaround between the first and second Filthy albums, was, you know, watching them and their work ethic, because they turned around their first two albums pretty quickly as well. And, you know, in the breaks, they were going off writing, and it was like, you know, I was like, man, you know, these kids are literally sort of 15 years younger than me, and they're working their ass off. And yeah, maybe I should work a little harder. it was a good source of inspiration for me and the Filthy Six as well. Just quite, it was fun, you know.
Now, yeah, I mean, we all, no matter what level we are, need to have a little bit of fire lit under us to remember that we have to work our ass off. So speaking of working our ass off and being a teacher, what advice would you give new musicians starting out?
Oh, man. Practice, you know. There's so many amazing musicians out there today, and, you know, all the music colleges with the amazing jazz courses that they have, and, you know, the great amount of amazing musicians who teach as well, you know, Sean Jones, the great trumpet player, American trumpet player, teaches at, you know, Barclay, is a great example, you know, phenomenal player, and by all accounts, a phenomenal teacher. There's so many incredible players out there, and they're all kind of shedding away like crazy, and it's tough competition out there, you know. There's some crazy players out there, so if you want to be in it, then yeah, you've got to work your ass off, and, you know, listen to as much music as you can, absorb as many different styles of music as you can, and get out there as much as you can. You know, I didn't really sort of, you know, I came from a classical background, so it was kind of practice, you know, and then rehearsal and then perform. But the kind of jam session mentality from jazz, I didn't really get into that until, you know, my kind of late 20s or you know, when I started to, when the penny dropped after, you know, doing that jazz postgrad at Trinity College of Music, and, you know, my kind of headspace changed. I was like, okay, you know, this is what I want to do. I want to go into this professionally, this kind of the lighter side of music, the commercial music, jazz music, soul music, whatever. And that's where the first time I kind of started to go to jam sessions or actually, you know, play with people, and you learn so much from that. You know, I learned so much when, you know, because the first Mumford album, I laid up a you know, two or three trumpets in parts. So when we first went out on the road, initially there was just trumpet, trombone, but as they went bigger, they wanted to kind of recreate the sound of the record. So had two trumpets, and the second trumpet in the UK is a good friend of mine, Rich Freeman from the Royal College. And in America, it was this guy, Ephraim Owens from Austin, who's a great jazz trumpet player. The king of Austin, I call him. Literally everybody knows his name. You know, you walk down the street and it's like, hey, Ephraim Owens. And it's like they roll out the red carpet, you know. And he's a phenomenal jazz player. And that, you know, that's he studied that from a young age, and that's all he does. You know, he plays you know, jazz gigs 5-6 nights a week. And, you know, on the Mumford gig, we'd caught up and finished the gig, and we go in the dressing room and we jam together, you know. And Dave Williamson, the Mumford trombone player, is a great jazz trombone player, great writer. And he did the, you know, jazz course up at Leeds, which is one of the, you know, the early conservatoires to have a jazz course in the UK. The Leeds College of Music is a great jazz course and churned out, you know, hundreds, thousands of great players over the years. So I learned so much from just jamming with those two in the dressing room. You know, we sort of jammed for like 2 or 3 hours after the gig, you know, put a Jamie Avis will play along or something, or just play along to records, or just, you know, play with each other. And yeah, I learned so much from those two, and still do. And, you know, playing with people is as good a practice as anything. You know, keep your ears open. That's a good bit of advice.
That's definitely a good piece of advice to give to all the listeners and new musicians that are coming up, for sure. And so what is your legacy? What do you want to be remembered for the most, musically?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think when we were recording, you know, the 56 albums, me and Nigel Price, the guitar player, if you haven't checked him out, you should do. Well, you can hear his playing on the records. Phenomenal guitar player. And again, I learned so much from just playing with him and on stage, listening to him and bouncing off him. And we talk about, you know, leaving a legacy behind, those records that, you know, we put so much heart and soul into them. And, you know, we took so much inspiration from those guys, you know, Jack McDuff records, you know, David Newman and Donald Byrd, all those guys, you know, and Grant Green. And, you know, we wanted to kind of recreate our homage to those guys. And that kind of, you know, when I first started the band, I was kind of quite strict about the idea. The idea was that it has to be, the kind of vibe and the style has to sit in that kind of late 60s Blue Note prestige style from kind of 67 to 70. You know, I didn't want it to kind of be too much before or certainly nothing after that kind of bracket. It was like a 3-year period of the record that I was really into. Like, you know, 1967, I think, was when Alligator Boogaloo came out with Lou Donaldson, and that kind of kickstarted that kind of, you know, that kind of crossover thing. I think you had, obviously you had Sidewinder, you know, Lee Morgan with that kind of boogaloo groove from the kind of New York Latin scene, the kind of Puerto Rican thing that was going on in New York at the time. But the kind of Alligator Boogaloo really broke through that crossover charts in the States, and a load of guys were doing that kind of thing. And just that kind of soul jazz, that kind of period of soul jazz is so rich and groovy. And that's always been my inspiration. So we were kind of like, right, we if we're doing this, it has to, you know, sit alongside that. Not in, you know, I'm not saying in any way as good as those guys, you know, they're all our kind of absolute heroes, but that was the inspiration, and that's where we wanted it to kind of sit. So, you know, we were like, if we do this, we have to do it properly. And we recorded it all live to tape, all in one room, you know, limited overdubs. And, you know, we wanted to capture that live spirit and vibe which those, you know, those records were made by, you know. And we're like, you know, our little piece of recorded history, you know, especially on Acid Jazz, which is one of those labels which kind of inspired me as a kid. I was like, that's, you know, that's leaving our little piece of recorded history, you know.
Definitely. And I think it's great that you're paying homage to all of these greats, and I think you're right up there with them. Maybe you won't say it about yourself, but I can definitely say it as a listener and the listening audience.
That's very kind. Thank you.
So before I let you go, my last question for you is, since you were kind of in that sweet spot and not trying to branch out into anything newer, I do see that you have done some singles, doing some MJ covers. Looks like you recorded Want to Be Starting Something and Girlfriend, which is an MJ a cover of Paul McCartney. How is it kind of working with singers and doing covers versus your kind of other stuff?
Well, the idea was that I've always been a massive Michael Jackson fan. I remember as a kid, Michael Jackson's Thriller was the first album that I was aware of in the concept of an album in its, as a form. We had it on cassette and we used to listen to it as, my dad would put it on the cassette player in the car on long journeys, when we go and see family, friends or whatever. And I know that album inside out and I love it. And I loved, The Girl Is Mine. It's cheesy, but it's groovy. And I love the Beatles, obviously. And I love Paul McCartney, I love Michael Jackson. I love that interplay. And when I found out that, Girlfriend was off, was a Paul McCartney tune originally, I was like, oh, wow, this is great, and it was Off the Wall. I think, Craig Charles does the Funk and Soul show.
Yes. I just had one of my singles played on its record show this last month.
Yeah. They've been very good to us over the years. Simon Hodge, their producer, has been good, played our singles and records and stuff. And he contacted me. I had an idea. I was listening to Off the Wall on a train journey or something, and I was listening to Go Up. I was thinking, this is very subtly groovy. And most people would probably put it as a kind of cheesy tune, blah, blah, blah. May even, zoom past it when they're listening to it or whatever. This has got, this could be groovy. This could be kind of groovy in a 56 kind of way. I often think about weird tunes that would work in the 56 kind of idea in that kind of 67 to 70. If I could rework it so it would sit in that style, because those guys... like Grant Green's version of Let the Music Take Your Mind, the kind of Cool and the Gang tune. It's like getting pop tunes and reworking them in that kind of sensibility. And I was just thinking about that as an idea, and I thought the groove, because I love Archie Bell on the drums, Tighten Up was a big tune for me growing up. I heard it on a kind of Motown compilation as a kid when I was getting into that, soul music and everything. And I thought, do you know what? I think Girlfriend could work over the Tighten Up groove. And just as I was kind of mulling this over in my head, I get an email from Simon Hodge, the producer from Craig Charles Show, and says, right, we'd love you to be involved. We're getting loads of different bands to do a version of a track from Off the Wall. I've been meaning to get in touch with you. As he was saying it, I was thinking, oh man, I want to do Girlfriend. And he says, I'm really sorry, but there's only two tunes left. One of them is Girlfriend. And I said, yeah, we'll do it. We'll do it. And it was just such a weird coincidence that I'd been thinking about this for a minute. And then Simon hits me up and says, can you do this tune? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. And went away and played around with it. And I'm it's one of my favorite tunes off that second record, The Fox. It was really fun to record. I think it works really well. And the singer, who's a great singer from, he's actually from LA, Brendan, I know him through Mark, the sax player, his ex-girlfriend Natalie Williams, a great soul singer out of the UK, and she has this thing, this kind of collective Natalie Williams Soul Family, and they've been doing this monthly night, Soul Family Sundays, at Ronnie Scott's for years. I mean, that's got to be over 10 years, if not more, but Brendan has been singing, with her for that time, an incredible singer, and I was thinking, who can I get to do this, and I kind of wanted that kind of Donny Hathaway vibe on it. And we got Brendan in and, said what I wanted and the star. We ran it through a couple of times and that was it. It was like second or third take and it's killer. I'm very chuffed with that version. And then at the Thriller was my first love, first Michael Jackson love, and Want to Be Starting Something, that first track, I listened to that over and over and over again. And, I thought it was just a kind of bit of a joke, really, to continue the Michael Jackson theme, because everyone said, oh, that was a bit off the wall, no pun intended. to do a kind of Michael Jackson tune. And I was like, well, I'm sure we could do another one in the kind of 46 vein. I was just sort of playing around with the piano one day, and I thought, you know, it could work. We do it like a late 60s kind of soul version, you know, kind of almost Motown-y, you know, kind of Jackie Wilson kind of thing. And yeah, it kind of worked out really well. You know, again, it changes the whole kind of dynamic of that tune, I think. And I was chuffed with the way it came out, and got a lot of friends together to do the BVs, you know, all the kind of Irreversible and all that kind of thing. And yeah, it was great fun. Great fun to do both of those tunes. Brendan's a killer singer.
Yeah, I checked out some of his stuff too after that, because I was like, who's the singer? But he has an amazing voice.
Oh, he does. He's got a ridiculous range. There's all this kind of histrionic kind of three octave, you know, crazy stuff. And I had to say, you know, say to him, Donny Hathaway, just keep it to Donny Hathaway. That's who I am. But yeah, he's killer. He did a great job with those tunes.
Well, talent, I always say, attracts talent. And so you can definitely hear that, like the symbiotic and serendipity of that type of relationship.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Well, I don't want to keep you too long. I know that you have other things to do on your plate, but I want to thank you again for coming on Deeper Grooves to talk with me on the podcast about your music and the Filthy Six. We look forward to hearing some of your new music from the U.S. band and the U.K. band coming up within the next year. And we'll most certainly circle back to you once this is out so that you have the links to everything and you can post about it and tag you on socials and everything. But we really enjoyed talking with you about your illustrious career, and we hope many more years to come we can talk to you as you continue to progress.
Well, I thank you. That's very kind, and thanks for giving me a shout. It was great to chat.
Great to chat. We'll be talking soon. Take care.
All right. Cheers, man. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hey, everyone. You just listened to Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, hosted by Cliff Beach and sponsored by California Soul Music Record Label. I really love getting to meet new people, and I thank John Hines for introducing me to Nick Edwell, who we had on today. Thank you, Nick, for being on and talking about the Filthy Six, your past albums, and your work with Mumford & Sons. It was super interesting, and I'm sure a lot of people enjoyed listening to it as well. I'd like to thank our engineer, Tim Hall, and 1192 Studios for mixing and mastering this recording today. If you like what you hear and you want to hear more, you can check us out online at www.californiasoulmusic.com/deepergrooves. Until then, stay funky, stay soulful, do what you do. No one can tell you you're doing it wrong. Take care.